am I? Welcome to a dip into the Sharing Things archives and a selection of five episodes that revolve around the themes of belonging, fitting in, and finding your place. These are conversations about growth and about identity. Listen now and have a personal ponder.
Hi, I'm Amalia. I'm a current student and I'm the host of Sharing Things. Sharing Things is a conversation between two people who have just met but who share a connection to the university. We start with a meaningful object that they have brought to the studio, and we take it from there. In this episode, you will meet Ellen Blunston and Rachel Weiss. Ellen is a fourth-year student and the Disabled Students Officer of Edinburgh University Students Association. Rachel runs a counseling and coaching consultancy and is the founder of Menopause Cafe. Let's see where this takes us. Okay. So we usually start with the question, what have you brought to the studio and why?
Do you want to go first? Shall I go first?
Go on. Yours are all so mysteriously.
I'm like hiding them. So these are, this is my granny's wedding ring and this is my papa's signet ring. I wear them every single day. They both passed away last summer quite unexpectedly. Oh. And they meant a lot to me. My family's quite small. It's, you know, me, my mum, my dad, my sister. And it was those two as well. So now that they're gone, it's a lovely reminder of the wonderful memories I have with them. And I feel very out of balance right now because I'm not having them on my hands. I got them on the table. So those are my two things. And I love them very dearly.
Whose parents were they? Your
mum's? My mum's parents, yeah. So we all lived in live in Aberdeen. And yeah, they were big part of our lives, and they passed away about a month apart from each other in the summer. We had such a, if I can describe a funeral as lovely, I will. The church was absolutely packed. We raised so much money for the hospice that my granny was in. There was so many lovely, lovely people. They were, I appreciated them while they were alive so much, but now that they're gone, I can appreciate the impact they had on so many other people as well. They were, you know, my granny was a nurse. They owned a car garage and they really did just touch the lives of so many people. And it's such a nice reminder of them. This is also my granny's watch as well.
How lovely.
So I have them with me all the time.
It sounds like they had an impact on you as well.
Yeah, hugely. My mum worked when I was younger, so I always used to go to my granny's house after primary school. Either she would walk me home, and then once I got like big enough, I could walk home by myself.
Go you.
Let me go. So I stayed there for tea a lot. When they were selling their house, there was ketchup splatters on the living room wallpaper from where I was eating like my chicken nuggets and chips and ketchup as a kid, which is hilarious. Wow. I hope the new owners like have redone that room because my like 12-year-old ketchup splatters would not be appreciated. So I spent a lot of time with them growing up, and my younger sister did too. She's 6 years younger than me, so she's 14.
Did you fight over the rings and the watch, or was she not interested?
It was quite good, actually, because we had my granny's engagement ring, which my mum has. She had a lovely silver with, like, blue sapphires in them. And my sister only wears silver jewellery, and I only wear gold jewellery.
Nice.
So it worked out perfectly. Amazing. That we were able to get. And, you know, we found them. My papa hadn't worn this in years. I don't even know if he ever really wore it, but it's got his initials like carved into the JCH, which I just love. I think it's great. Yeah. And
do you know the stories behind the rings?
Yeah, so this is her wedding ring, which I love. I have it, put it on here, and it's got really cute engravings in the back of it, which I don't quite know what they mean. I need to work that out because I didn't actually notice that until recently. And then I presume this was a present to him, probably from his dad. His dad started the garage that they owned, and then it was handed down to my papa. So I presume this was a present, but it is, considering how old I presume it is, it's very in good condition. So presumably, we found it in the back of a drawer somewhere. So I think it's just luck that I have it now, and it is just nice to have something of his that's mine.
Yeah. Piece of them that you wear every single day.
Yeah, I always think they live on in you, in their influence on you.
Absolutely.
And that's like a physical representation, manifestation
so,
of
of the meaning that they gave to me. Uh-huh. You know, we were so close, and you know, it's just, it's such a nice, like, I have a very distinct morning ritual where I put mm-hmm. my jewelry, and it's just so nice to like put this on and think of them and think of all of the things that we had. And you know, with a summer so consumed with grief mm-hmm. that was very difficult for, especially for my mum, you know, losing both parents unexpectedly was, you know, very difficult. My granny's cancer diagnosis came, and then 7 weeks later she mm-hmm. passed, and then mm-hmm. my papa passed a month after that, of a broken heart basically, which yeah. is difficult, but it was kind of, it was quite reassuring for our family, I think, that his, that he got what he wanted. You know, he didn't want to live on without her. Mm-hmm. You know, he loved her so much. And
for them, it sounds good. But yeah. for your mom, for those left behind.
Absolutely.
There's a Greek myth that the gods visited a couple in mm-hmm. disguise. And then a big reveal. Hey, we're the gods. What do you want? You know, I'll give you anything you want. And what the couple asked for was that they would die together. That's so that neither of them would have to live without each other. And I was just thinking of
that's so
that
beautiful.
When you were talking about your grandparents.
Yeah, that is...
And it sounds lovely for them.
Yes, it's...
Although you...
Yeah, it was difficult,
the
but they were...
suffer for them almost, but grief. You're saving them having that.
Yeah, it was definitely an... Because, you know, when my granny died, it was so, so hard. But then it was kind of a very different emotional response when my papa then passed, because it was a solace, it was a comfort. It was, you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And... they've got what they wanted. I'm not personally very religious or spiritual person, but it is nice to think, oh, they're together now.
Yeah. I like that mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah, it's... while it was so difficult at the time, it's the best way it could have happened.
I think that's it. We never want them to die.
Yes, yeah. If it was,
just please stay
if
forever.
If it was up to me, yeah, yeah. everyone would live forever.
Impractical though it is,
oh,
that's what we want.
But it would be
Let's
great.
Never encounter loss. But given that they have to go...
Yeah, this is the best possible scenario. Yeah. And, you know, my granny had 7 very happy weeks in a hospice. She was the most sociable person. There's the classic story of Misa... 6 or 7 year old saying, Granny, did you know everyone in Aberdeen? Because every time we went into town together, she would like stop. It was actually very annoying sometimes. I was like, I'm just trying to shop.
Can we get on?
Yeah, like, come on, guys, I want lunch.
Get on with that.
But, you know, she was such a sociable lady who knew so many people.
And I love seeing a packed church for a funeral.
Oh, yeah.
And if we live too long, then there's nobody left
there's
to
no
come.
No one left. Yeah.
So actually, even the, you know,
yeah, it was incredible. Good, like, it was... You know, it was just like my dentist came.
Yeah.
You know, it was, we had a table with a quilt that my granny had made and some big photos of them on their wedding day and some tapestries that my papa had done for the church. Oh. It was just beautiful.
Yeah.
It was.
Sounds like a good funeral.
Yeah.
Or memorial, whatever it was.
Yeah. And my granny didn't want anyone to wear black. So I wore a pink dress with very inappropriate acrylic nails on, and she chose the shoes that I was going to wear to
and
her
she was
funeral.
Smiling down on you.
Yeah, and she was having a brilliant time. Uh-huh. She was like, all my friends are in the same room and everyone's wearing pink, so...
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Rachel, what did you wear? What did you wear to the funeral?
To Ellen's grandma's funeral?
I did see you there.
Thank
you for coming.
I was at my cousin's funeral a month ago who... killed herself, so that was tragic.
That's very hard.
Again, we were asked not to wear black, mm-hmm. and they had a quilt. One of the other cousins had handmade a quilt for her, and that was beautiful. Over the coffin.
Oh, that's lovely.
And that, for me, somehow felt that she was being... that we were trying to care for her and nurtured, even though clearly she wasn't feeling that mm-hmm. when she was alive. But there was something about the quilt at the funeral and the wearing some colour... and imagining her
mm-hmm. quilts are
hearing us.
So there was the other episode of this podcast where she brought in the quilt.
Yeah.
And I was listening to that. I think quilting is such an amazing art form. My mum trained as a textile designer, but quilts a lot all the time. We have so many quilts. We'll never get cold ever.
Uh-huh.
That's what I
even
need
in Edinburgh.
Winter. Yeah. I'm warm forever. Quilts are just... They're like another level of art form because I love the practicality of them.
Combined. And I like the mathematics of them because they're often geometrical as well.
I like the therapeutic aspect of it. Yes. Like making it and stuff.
Making it, like taking so much time to do all of the steps. And then you're left with a product that, you know, will last for years and is also just... You can literally wrap yourself
that's it, in
the
love
someone.
Or the, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I knit. I made this
Me
one.
Too. Well
you made
done.
That?
Yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, just for the listeners, I'm wearing a self-made thing. Yeah. So
I nearly brought my knitting with me. I'm
really?
Towards the end of a jumper.
It's my number one activity to do.
But it is calming.
Like,
it makes me stop and slow down. And
exactly.
Again, it's all you said about it, when it's a gift, you're unfolding somebody and it's personal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like when you're watching something, it makes you feel productive, even though you're not really.
Yes.
I've started many a scarf. I sadly didn't get my mother's artistic talent, and I'm disabled students officer for the university, and sometimes my hands just don't work. So knitting is like a comes and goes.
Uh-huh.
It's sometimes I can do it, and then I just leave it for 6 months, and then I do one more line, and then another 6 months later. One day I will finish a scarf.
This jumper is about 5 years old.
Love
the
that.
One I'm trying to finish off.
Yeah,
but it'll be new when you finish it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I have tendinitis in my arm right now because I spent so much time just in one go making this.
Right.
So then now
I just can't
the repeated.
That you meant like. The different types of knit you put in a zip.
The zip is really getting me. Knitting, incredible. No problem, but sewing the zip in, I hate sewing.
That's amazing.
So that is another
thanks.
Level.
Yeah. Tell us about your object.
My objects, I couldn't pick, so I have three.
Excellent.
But I think the most important one is this, which is my donor card.
Yes.
For the listeners at home, NHS donor card, because... And I just discovered you can get one with different belief systems
on
them.
Wow.
So I'm not quite sure why, but that for me made it a two-in-one card because I chose to have the Christian symbol on it. And the donor card means a lot to me because... How many years ago? About 19 years ago? In 2001, my husband's life was saved by somebody who was carrying a donor card.
Wow.
And I'm just really touched that a complete stranger in Northern Ireland and her family, because it's not just the person carrying the card, the family have to go. Yeah, we agree. In a moment of grief, you know, thinking of that bereavement, because it was a sudden death, as far as we know, the generosity of strangers saved my husband's life.
Fantastic.
My kids have grown up with a dad. They were sort of 5, 3 and nothing at the time. And I haven't had to be a single mum because I think being a single parent is very difficult. I take my hat off to everyone who does it.
Absolutely.
So any organ donors listening out there or blood donors, thanking you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if
you have
not
changed
already
our lives.
Registered, then register.
Yeah. We can stick the link at the end
we have
of the
a call
podcast.
To action.
That's right. Call to action. Easily done. So that's my object that basically changed my life. And I think that's wonderful. That cheers me up when I despair of human nature, the cruelty, that we're also amazingly wonderful as humans, as well as amazingly cruel. And I love to hang on to that thought.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. We're both. We're all a mixture of good and not so good. You know, in our best moments, we're just amazing.
Yeah.
And we have moments, we all have moments we're ashamed of, and that there's both in there.
Yeah.
Rather than just there are good people and there are bad people.
Yeah, true,
Maybe I'm a bit idealistic.
No, but I think
that's
it's
what
nice
I believe. Yeah.
To look out for the best in people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just try to believe that everyone's doing the best they can with the resources
they
have.
Yeah.
Given whatever they were brought up with or whatever shit they're going through at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, how did you feel when you got the message that your husband got donated?
Well, huge relief because we'd been on the waiting list for 9 months. So he had nearly died several times. It's like, great, it's happening. Yeah. And we had to get in the ambulance, which I'd never been in before, from Perth where we live, to just across the road here, Edinburgh Royal Infirmary.
It's quite a
which
long
is
time.
Now
it's
something else.
Big ambulance journey.
It was.
Edinburgh Futures Institute now.
I think that's what it is now.
Oh, really? Is that what that
Uh-huh, that building with turrets
to be?
And things. So when we got the call, huge relief, but also tempered because you never know till you get there whether it's going to be a good match and whether it might have cancer in it or whether it's... So trying not to get too excited.
Mm-hmm.
It also felt very weird to be in an ambulance going to the hospital for a dangerous operation when he was actually okay that day.
Yeah.
Because usually we tended to rush him to hospital when he was not looking good. It's like, this is a bit odd. And we had the baby with us.
Okay,
little baby, have we got enough food? And actually, I think she was still breastfeeding at that stage. And leaving the other two kids at home and having to arrange for someone to tell them when they woke up. And he was meant to go to my eldest's primary school class that day.
Oh.
So when she woke up, it had to be broken to her that Daddy was not going to be coming in, and she was not pleased. Yeah. We're like, well, he's busy saving his life. Yeah. He'll be glad in the long run.
5-year-olds don't
priorities.
Like,
yeah, it doesn't matter at that point when you're five and Dad's meant to come to school. He doesn't.
School.
Yeah, yeah. No. Come on. Do the transplant another day.
He's a liver.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember waiting because it was like a 9-hour op in whatever Futures Institute that it is now in the turret. So that was a tricky day, but it ended well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after that, we don't take colds very seriously. It's like you're alive. Fine.
You're fine.
No sympathy. No sympathy for anything less than a life and death. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about that experience now?
We still commemorate it. We have a celebratory party for friends about every 5 years on the anniversary just to celebrate
That's
being
lovely.
Alive.
Yeah.
And I think it's changed. In my better moments, it means I'm just very appreciative. Like you guys talking about appreciating the view when you wake up.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like catching those moments of, hey, aren't I lucky to be alive?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, in my worst moments, I completely forget that and get very annoyed with him.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
As one does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As one does.
And I kind of forget, aren't I lucky? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a... I always feel like it sounds very dramatic when I say I had a near-death experience in December, November. Mm-hmm. But I did. I had a near-death experience. I contracted meningitis and, which was not good. So I passed out in my house. I spent 2 hours where I was definitely awake, but I was basically just staring at a wall and just had nothing. There was like nothing going on behind the eyes. I managed to stumble my way through phoning NHS 24, which took me half an hour to dial 111, which was fun. I was then, I actually thought that because of I have a lot of other medications for my other conditions, I thought I was overdosing on something. I thought maybe I'd taken too much or something had gone wrong. My lovely friend Louise, she took me in her car along with our other friend Alice, who was just kind of trying to talk to me to make sure that I...
Yeah.
Stayed. And they very quickly admitted me, and the nurse said, we're giving you these antibiotics. They're basically if bleach was a medicine. So I had a lumbar puncture, I had a MRI scan or a CT scan, I can't remember. I had as many fluids as they could get into me, and thankfully they caught it. But I didn't quite realise at the time how serious it was until the consultant came in on her morning rounds and said, We can discharge you today because you're going back with your parents. She said, you know, if you'd just been going back on your own, we wouldn't have let you out. And she said, anything that happens within the next couple of months, come back. Because basically, if I'd gone to sleep rather than phoning NHS 24, I would not have woken up.
Right.
Which is, it's a scary thought, because as someone with a lot of health conditions anyway, it never really got to that point. You know, I've been in pain, they test me every 6 months to see if I need both of my knees replaced. You know, there's lots of things going
on. That's different from dying.
So different. Yeah. And it's just, like, I feel so sorry for my poor mother who I phoned in hospital. I was like, can you come and get me? death is weird, basically. And after a year being kind of surrounded by it, to then almost go through something myself. And my mother is quite superstitious. Sorry, Mum. And she very much was like, death comes in threes. And she was like,
well,
don't
you've proved
die.
Her wrong.
Yes,
so
I've beaten the superstition.
Yeah.
Like, still alive. Death is a very scary thing. And, you know, it's so interesting to hear you speak about it from a family member perspective, because I think families process it more. I don't know if this is the same for your husband, but I feel like it's just like, oh yeah, that kind of happened. Well, you know, I kind of joke about it like, oh, almost died, but I'm still here.
Well, you weren't at the bedside looking at you as your mum was.
Yeah, I couldn't see myself.
Yeah, it's a bit like I've been told childbirth, like, so I have three kids, but I don't really have the thing about childbirth because I was on the inside of it.
Yeah.
Whereas my husband had to watch it. Yeah. So I think they're a bit like, what? And I don't know if it's the same with death. I don't know, not having been on the inside. But like with my kids, I've always thought, aren't I lucky I can have kids? Mm-hmm. And they might die because I know babies. I'm just rather gloomy because of the whole death thing. And I just want to enjoy them as long as they're here.
Yeah.
Rather than, do you know, the other way around, which is to think, why did my kid die or my husband die or me?
Yeah.
It's like the glass half full, glass half empty.
Yeah, you've got to spin it. You've got
enjoy
to...
enjoy.
Yeah, you've got
whatever
to...
whatever we've got.
Enjoy it and process it in a way in your head that doesn't cause excess harm afterwards. Yeah, it's such a difficult and different thing, realizing mortality.
I think we can't take it in because it would just be too much.
Yeah, yeah.
But people like you who've touched it, or even with the disabilities,
mm-hmm.
I think you get a bit closer than those of us who just maybe bob along regardless.
Yeah, you can see the storm coming, but it's always away. And then occasionally you drive headfirst into it by accident. You're like, oh.
And then you forget it for a bit.
And then away it goes and you turn around and you look at the sunshine.
And you worry about frost on the window or whatever
else. Yeah, and you worry about things and then you kind of... I think that's why the rings are so good for me, because it's very grounding and it's very centering.
Touch it.
Yeah, you can, like when I put it on, I think how lucky I was to have someone, and then also how lucky I am that I'm still here. You know, it's kind of a wake up call to be like, oh, now you have to do something. Like they did so well.
They believed in you.
Yeah.
They wanted
you
to do well.
Loved me.
So
they
even
would
if
be...
you don't feel like it.
Yeah, I've got to go. I've got to go for them.
What? So. What makes you feel, because you touched on kind of like the feeling of being alive and stuff. What do you think specifically makes you feel alive? Or is there anything that makes you feel grounded? Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, you mentioned the rings, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm sort of a bit embarrassed to say this, but it is my faith. So there's this sense of being connected to something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be triggered when I look at the mountains, like on the train ride here, and there was this full moon, and there's just that awe.
Yeah.
Of whether you call it nature or I call it God, that just bigger thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or, it's in the still, silent moments, because I meditate or pray in the morning, and it's those moments. Otherwise, I would rush through life. You know, you talked about being busy, Ellen. I would just go from one exciting, brilliant experience or awful, stressful moment to the next without ever really getting that feeling of stopping.
Processing it and reflecting.
Being alive and being in awe, basically being in awe of the miracle of wonderful, awful, mixed up, beyond our comprehension life.
Yeah.
Because we can't box it and explain it.
No.
That is so interesting, because that answer is so similar to my answer in a very different way, because as someone who's not religious, as soon as you said what makes you feel alive, I was thinking about community and thinking about people, and it is that overarching sense of belonging and there being something there that you have, and whether that's from God, whether that's from people, whether that's from whatever else you believe
For some people it's a belief system of politics
or
campaigning for the environment, but community and people,
you know,
is
and I,
very basic to us.
And I think about you know the best times I have, and it's times where I'm with a group of people, and you know, I think back to it was Disability History Month in November. Sadly, I only got 10 days of it before I was
nearly died.
you know,
yeah.
And we had and we had a lovely mixer at the beginning of that month, and it was supposed to go on from 5 until 7 p.m. And I got home at about 10:30, having drunk a bit and eaten a meal, and wasn't expecting to have such a wonderful, productive evening with these people that either I knew and were friends with, or I'd never met before, or I kind of only half knew, you know, speaking about these big issues. And it felt like a productive rant of like, here's all of the things that I think are bad, that, you know, ableism and the problems that we have with the institutions that we're in, but here's what we can do about it. And we haven't done any of that yet. But we will.
And you know you're not alone.
Yes.
I think it's that real contact. I'm a counsellor and a coach, and we talk about that true contact.
Yeah.
When you're being yourself and talking about what matters rather than just...
Yeah. It's so lovely to know that people have the same problems as you. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we'd like the problems not to exist.
Sure.
But having that connection is just so important. And I think that there are pockets of the university community that I just feel so attached to that have made my time in Edinburgh what it is. You know, the classes are great and getting a degree is lovely. I would love to graduate. That would be nice. But
it's the connections with people. Yeah. I was thinking, what do I remember from my year in Edinburgh? And it was the people that came to mind first.
Yeah.
I loved the studying. I mean, that's where I met my husband. He was studying here. And some of my lifelong friends, yeah. One of whom just visited for New Year. We hadn't seen each other for 20 years. She lives in Switzerland. And it was the international community for me because I was a postgrad. Mm-hmm. And it's people and connections.
Definitely. There's so many incredible people that I've met here. And it's so beautiful to have a sense of belonging somewhere. You know, it's very different belonging to a hometown. The transition from school to uni for me was quite interesting because I didn't feel very settled. I'm from Aberdeen and I'd never really felt a connection to the place before. It was kind of a running joke that Aberdeen's rubbish and there's nothing to do here, because there wasn't. Our like a fun after school activity was getting in my friend's car, driving to the beach and then going home because it was too cold to actually go on the beach.
I was a student in Aberdeen.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's a place. Not to bash Aberdeen, you're lovely, but yeah. So coming to Edinburgh and getting something that I hadn't really felt before and I didn't realise that I needed. I didn't quite realise that I didn't love Aberdeen and I didn't get that sense of community there. I shout out to my friends in Aberdeen, I do still love you.
But I think there's something about leaving your home community mm-hmm. and finding your own one where you're yourself, you're not the daughter of your parents. And you can reinvent yourself.
Yeah, you're a chosen family.
Chosen family. Yeah. I love that.
And then I think when we return to our hometown, we see it with different eyes and appreciate it. But we need to leave it.
Yeah, need to spread metaphorical wings.
To come back. What you said about belonging, I think we all have a deep need to belong mm-hmm. and to connect. And I run menopause cafes. Yeah. And again, it's different because it's not really a disability, but it can feel like that. And the things that people say after it are, now I know I'm not alone.
Yeah.
So even though the challenges haven't gone.
No, it's just, it's normalising the things that you struggle with. And once they become normalised, they seem smaller and they seem more manageable.
That's it.
And there's hope.
Hope is what we need.
Yeah. Yeah. In a turbulent world that is full of so many things that are beyond our control.
It would be easy to despair.
Absolutely.
But hope is wonderful. Like Pandora's box. Hope was the little one that crept out.
Yeah.
And I look back at the hard times in my life and it's like hope, faith, call it what, but that hope that mm-hmm. despite, contrary to all logic, maybe something good just might.
Yeah. Hope's a kind of, I feel like it's more of a shared emotion than an individual one.
I think so. It reminds me, my day job, apart from Menopause Cafe, is running a counselling and leadership organisation. And one of our lines as counsellors mm-hmm. is, we believe in you even when you can't believe in yourself.
Oh, that's nice.
And it sounds like your grandparents believed in you.
Yeah, they did.
And
they
we all need people who believe in us even when we can't mm-hmm. believe, whether that's friends, grandparents, counsellor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that keeps us going, I think.
Yeah, very much so. I'm in the process at the moment of kind of learning to just like, it's okay.
To be kind to yourself.
Yeah,
talk to
you
yourself
almost
like
died 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Like,
you're doing amazingly to get out of bed and function at all.
Yeah, so you can sit down. It's okay. Like, you don't have to be everything all at once.
Yeah.
Self-compassion.
Like self-compassion is so important. Yeah. And it's so much easier to practice compassion to others than it mm-hmm. is to yourself.
Wow. I've really enjoyed listening to all of this, honestly.
I've had fun.
Yeah.
I've had to put my rings back on as well because I felt really unbalanced without them.
I think that's so interesting that like as soon as you take them off, you feel like not yourself.
Something feels wrong with my hands.
Yeah.
It's like as soon as I put them on, I become on.
Yes.
You know, I become.
I'm ready to take on the world.
Yeah.
It's like your protective shield.
I think. Very much.
Yeah.
And it's just if I don't have them on, then it's just a bit. I just feel a bit weird.
Mm-hmm. And that's just after a few months.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But then what a few months.
Yeah, what a few. What a few.
Nearly dying
what
and
a few
losing
months.
Your grandparents.
It's been a... 2019 will go down in the books as like, maybe not the best. Like,
yeah,
real got like hopes for this new decade. Like, please. So.
So when I was born, I was given this gold necklace. And then my sister found it. Like, very recently, she found it hidden away in some drawer. Like, we had all forgotten about it. Uh-huh. And now she wears it every day.
She wears it.
She wears it.
Your necklace.
I know, but it's...
sister move.
I know. It is. First of all, stealing my things. But second of all, when she told me that, I was like, wow, that
it's a link. Yeah,
that makes me feel so happy because you're wearing my necklace every day.
Yeah,
yeah.
This was from my sister. This is my other object.
That's so cute.
And she brought it back. It's a little elephant, wooden elephant that she brought back from a trip to India that has baby elephants around it. And my mum comes from India. My sister brought it back. It reminds me of my kids. It's like there's so much.
Oh, that's beautiful. So much in one
object. And I can stroke it.
Yes.
So it's been on my desk since, actually, before I had kids, so about 25 years. Wow. And I really like it. Sisters, sisters are good.
Yeah. Sisters are good.
They are good.
They are a pain in
the absolutely, as well.
Even when they're, little, 14-year-olds are never great, but my sister is, I have to say, a pretty cool one. She cuddled her hair off and then one day was like, Mum, can I shave my head? So Mum got out the clippers and she shaved her head. And now my sister, we call her a Kiwi because she does look a bit like a Kiwi with like the little fuzz on top. Yeah. But she's so much braver and so much smarter than I think I will ever be, or any person
that,
will ever
that
be.
Self-compassion.
I know,
bit.
I yeah, know,
that's
but
self-compassion,
right? Comparison is the enemy of joy.
It is, but like on paper, she is just better than any other human that's ever existed. So, like, that's not even putting myself.
Yeah, maybe that's
down.
Just sister love.
That's just
you
really
know?
Like she's great. She plays the drums and
my
she sings opera.
Even better. Okay,
yeah. With her little shaved head, singing opera and.
Wow,
she's the
she
best.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you should have had her on. Honestly, she would have been like
in a few years' time.
In a few, yeah, she'll be here. Like with her, she'll bring along a crocodile or something.
Yeah,
a real one.
So to end our conversation, we always end with the same question. I don't know if you've heard it, and that is, if you could associate your object with one word, what would it be?
Oh, love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll have to go the same. I think we've both converged onto compassion and love and a sense of togetherness, whether that's from the memories of someone that you've lost or the carrying on of life in both loss and then living. I think love just sums up the community that we've been talking about, the objects that we have. And not to be cheesy, but also like my Edinburgh experience. Ooh, gross.
Sometimes being cheesy is...
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, and it is love. Like, if I didn't love Edinburgh, if Edinburgh didn't love me back, I wouldn't have stayed.
Mm.
And here I am after 4 years.
About to graduate.
Hopefully.
Yeah,
you will.
Yeah. I hope so. But love. It's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being on Sharing Things, Ellen and Rachel.
Thank you so much
we
for
enjoyed it.
Having us.
Yeah.
Yeah. A very, very
heartfelt.
Heartfelt chat.
Thank you for listening. Join us next week for another episode from the archive and more insight and reflection from our University of Edinburgh community. If you can't wait until next week, visit the Sharing Things website and find out more about our guests and their many conversations. You can find us at www.ed.ac.uk/sharing-things-podcast or just search for Sharing Things and you'll find us along with a Sesame Street Stranger Things parody. Yes, you heard that right.